This.
Hey, how you doing? What are you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Is Felger and Mads.
What?
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
Bruins, Celtics, re-entry Monday. Everything on the board. Dave and Weymouth on the fight. Go ahead, Dave.
Guys, I have to say, you and Mads have been on point the entire time. This was an exciting fight. This is a huge, huge fight for boxing. Mads, you're correct. Deontay Wilder cannot box at all. He does have a straight 1-2 that is very fast and very powerful.
He's insanely fast. His hands are insanely fast.
The issue with the next fight with Joshua is 6'6", 250,
right,
and can box, and he looks like an Adonis. And Deontay Wilder, 6'7", he weighed about like 215 coming to this fight. So he's a lot lighter, and he can't actually box. Joshua has been fighting guys like Klitschko all over the London circuit that actually can box. It's going to be an issue for Deontay Wilder, but Wilder just made $10 million. This fight was a $10 million fight against Luis Ortiz. He beats Ortiz, his next fight he makes $10 million. So, you know, that was the intrigue for me. All of the hype going into it,
Look, Dave, let me just stop you. I mean, so let's say Joshua's a favorite. Let's say Joshua knows how to fight, Wilder doesn't. At least in that fight, you could say if Wilder hits him with a shot, he's got a chance.
Oh, yeah, no, and that's the whole appeal of it. That's the scary part about Wilder is you don't know where it's coming from.
But that's also the appeal of the heavyweight division. So if these little guys, you catch them with a shot, big deal. McGregor hit Mayweather with a shot early in their fight. It doesn't mean anything. If Wilder hits you with a shot, gets lucky, you're going down.
He is. He's given up weight, though. And I want to say when they showed the tail of the tape before the fight the other night, I want to say he was like a 211 and a half or something like that. But he is. He's 6'7", and Joshua is 6'6". It is. It's like
two huge guys. And
giants.
And they're in great shape, like which is I also sort of respect. These aren't when you watch heavy, Ortiz is heavy. And the poor fellow that Wilder fought the last time, remember the last fight?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That guy. Oh, just in horrible shape. You know, Wilder and Joshua are like in phenomenal shape. Like they actually put care into their craft, even though Wilder can't fight.
No,
he's in great shape.
This isn't George Foreman at the end of his career. The butterball out there in the middle of the butterbean, you know, one of those hacks.
Dan in the car. Go ahead, Dan, on the Celtics. What do you got?
Hey, how's it going, Matt? How are you doing today?
Good. Go ahead.
Nothing much. I got three words. All I got to say is horrible foul calls in the Celtics. I mean,
okay, I'm going to let you go because your phone's horrible. Horrible foul calls is what he said. Do you blame the refs for Saturday night in Houston?
No. I'm trying to think of which one he's talking about, and I don't remember it. I
feel like you threw the game away is what happened.
Is there a foul call you remember?
No.
I don't.
Neither do I.
Well, I mean, look, Grandy was talking about Marcus Smart could have, you know, you could have called a foul on Marcus Smart on that last, you know.
Oh, you're not going to get that one.
Thank you.
Also could have called him out of bounds.
Yeah. You know, and you know what? I watched the replay of it again. He didn't foul him. I mean, there was some contact when they both went up for the ball, but Smart fell out of bounds on his own. He didn't get pushed. But in fact, Paul didn't really even make an attempt to defend it because he had the sideline. I think it was Paul who was guarding him. He didn't make an attempt because he knew Smart had nowhere to go. So to me, there was no officiating issue in that game. The Celtics turned the ball over too many times on their own end of the floor. That's the thing that killed them. They gave away buckets after they got defensive rebounds.
They threw the game away, but I still feel they established themselves as who they are, which is, after Golden State, one of the best teams in the league.
If their bench plays like that, because I thought Morris and Monroe were the key to the game, Houston couldn't stop those guys.
Luke in Vermont, what do you think?
There was only one egregious call. The refs had nothing to do with the outcome. Paul played it perfect at the end, but there was one time where Kyrie took a charge on Harden. He just ran him right over that they should have called that. But the Celtics, you said it right, Felger. They played great. They proved they belong, but they choked it away. But, Tony, I'm surprised you don't like Capella. He's like a way better version of Noel. I would rather have him than Horford, and I like Horford. But he is a defensive presence. That's exactly what the Celtics need.
So, Luke, I didn't say I didn't like him. I mean, there was some stat with those three guys in the lineup, right? With Paul, Harden, and Capella in the lineup, they're something like 33-1, Houston is, or something like that. I'm just telling you that at the end of the day, he's 6'9", and he's thin. Monroe can take him down there and score. And Baines can push him around and score on him.
I'm just telling you, there's no need to talk about that specific matchup because you're not going to see Houston again. Houston's not getting by Golden State. Not happening. I think you're going to be in the finals. I think Saturday is one of those games that shows you you're going to be in the finals. And the only caveat I'll give you is, you know, Game 7 in Toronto. Notice I'm not mentioning Cleveland. They are done. Game 7 in Toronto? I don't know. Let's see that. Toronto's really...
You're pretty confident about Cleveland, huh?
Done. Toast.
Yeah,
it's,
you're
it's
out
over.
Of your mind.
Look at the... Take a look at LeBron's eyes. Just take a look at his body language and the look in his eye. Even when you just watch a highlight package of the Cavaliers, take a look at the look in LeBron's eye. When he gets that look, which is... This ain't working.
They got one more run in them.
It's over.
They got one more run in them. You're going to see some sort of...
I don't even know how afraid I am about Toronto Game 7 in Toronto, just with their institutionalized gutlessness in the playoffs, too, team.
Well, by that point, though, they will have been in the conference finals. They would have gotten through two rounds and beaten you three times. So, I just think once you get to Game 7, if you've made it all the way through to Game 7 of the conference finals, you've probably gotten through a bunch of points where you could have choked it away. That's all I'm saying.
That team's sackless. I'm telling you, Cleveland's got one more run in them. You are nuts to write off Cleveland this early.
Bill in Framingham on the fight. What'd you think?
Hey, Tony, I think you're nuts if you think this fight was fixed. If you're going to fix a fight, you're going to go down on a half-hearted shot that, you know, people might question. That uppercut that he got hit with would have killed me.
It was
you,
a monster. It was.
Bill,
it was
that's
a monster hit. You don't fix a fight like that. You just go down... Like a Sonny Liston type of thing.
I'm telling you, he had Wilder beaten, and he backed off. Why? Why? I'm not talking about the shots he took were legit. Fine, I'm not questioning that. I'm telling you, in the seventh round, he had Wilder. He had him. And it was at the end of the round, and Wilder went to the corner and came back out for the eighth, and he was still glassy-eyed. He was still loopy.
Well,
and Ortiz didn't go after him.
So boxing needed Wilder to win, start with that.
Exactly. Okay. That's what I'm saying.
So, but also, I mean, if you want more evidence that something was fishy, Wilder was ahead on all three cards. And pretty much everyone who watched the fight, now, I missed the first couple rounds. I came in late. But pretty much everyone who watched the whole fight and, you know, like the media, ringside observers, all had Ortiz. Like the AP, I was reading this in Chris Mannix's story. The AP had Ortiz up three rounds heading into the 10th. And I think others had all Ortiz up except the actual ringside judges, all of them had Wilder up.
Okay, so again, they showed the scorecard, and I did see the early rounds. Ortiz, based on the Showtime scorecard, won the first four rounds. He lost the fifth. He lost the sixth. He won the seventh and eighth. And in the seventh is when he knocked down Wilder.
Okay, so that's 6-4 heading into the 11th. Oh, so it was 10th.
Yeah, 6-3 heading into the 10th.
So, yep, there you go.
Yes, he was up 6-3 heading into the 10th.
Okay, but not on the judges' scorecards, Maz.
Okay, so that's shady. That is totally shady. And I'm telling you, the most stunning thing to me was, because it was apparent, watching it on TV, Wilder had nothing going back out there for the eighth. He was rubber-legged. He was glassy-eyed. He was still loopy. And Ortiz didn't go after him. He just sat there and let him gain his composure. And then by the time the ninth came around, Wilder had his wits about him again.
But the call is right. Those shots in the 10th, there were a couple there that were...
vicious.
Legit.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Blood force drum!
Gonna run him right down their throat!
Felger.
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Kyrie, left-hand dribble on Harden, gets past him, switches to the right hand, scoops it up, thought it was going, but the rim spit it out. Harden, skip pass into the corner for a three for P.J. Tucker.
That's a big swing.
Back iron, rebound, Rozier. Rozier, though, stripped to the ball by P.J. Tucker. Chris Paul comes out with it, finds Ariza for a three that ties the game. Kyrie bounce pass, picked off by Ariza. Ariza goes the length of the floor and scores to put the Rockets ahead. Timeout, Brad Stevens.
Wow.
Horford catches, open three, no good, golden opportunity. And Al Horford just can't shake this slump right now. Rozier puts it to the floor, throws out to Horford, up fakes the three, drives in traffic, turns his body, floats it up, no good. Rebound, Houston. Capella had it, ripped away by Horford, loose ball on the floor. Ariza has got it.
You played a great game. You've gotten right to that point, and you just made mistakes at the very end.
Turnovers were even. Then the Celtics committed the final two. And the points off turnovers, this is going to be the difference. Kyrie tries to miss it, and he ended up making it. He tried to bank it, and it circled the rim and fell in.
Little recap there of how the Celtics just fell apart there at the end of that game. So they fell apart. They should have won it. They lost it, and they gagged. And Al Horford looks old and rickety here. Since the All-Star break, and there's things, I mean, when we're talking about all these things, I still think it established who the Celtics are. which is one of the best teams in the league. They should have won the game. They were sure. They just walked into the hottest team in the league, the best team in the league's building, and had it won. And then they gagged it. And Max was right. I'm glad Jimmy put that one little exchange in there. There was that one Kyrie Irving drive where the ball was down. It was down. I don't know how it bounced out. That would have given them an 8-point lead.
It was a huge, huge swing.
Well,
there.
That's what Max said. Huge swing, because then the Rockets went straight down, and I think Harden hit someone in the corner. They hit a three, so it was in just like that. Instead of the Celtics being up 8, they were only up 3, and they started turning the ball over. But like that, if that thing just stays down, they probably win that game going away.
Yeah, and it was again. It was a good shot. The ball was in. I mean, somehow it came out, and so you know that was it was. I thought right then I went, oh. Man, that hurts. Because Houston could score so damn fast. It's like, again, it was a 5-point swing there in the span of like 10 seconds, if that.
God, because all they do is chuck threes.
Oh, gosh, ridiculous. Again, there was all kinds of stats with Houston that are off the charts. That, you know, the average team takes, and I'm, you know, 25% of their shots are from mid-range, and Houston's like half of that. They just they either take layups and dunks and free throws or threes. That's it.
And what sort of, when I look at Houston, Maz, the Celtics shoot a crap ton of threes, too. But I feel like it's a system. You know, they move it around the line. They find the open guy. They, you know, Houston is just grip it and rip it. Whoever got it, just chuck it up.
Yeah.
And in all those key situations in the fourth quarter, they're still just bombs away. And I don't know.
Well, Eric Gordon was nails.
I just have no faith in that team. If they face Golden State in the conference finals, they're going to get waxed.
I just don't think you can play that way and win. Because it's too loose, especially on the defensive end. It's too loose.
We've got Isaiah in Boston. Hi, Isaiah.
Hey, how you doing? I just had a comment about one of the plays. In the last two-minute report, when Al Horford grabbed the rebound, the Celtics called timeout. We were never rewarded that timeout.
So, yeah, so that's one I don't get on them for, because they were trying.
The one when he was on the floor.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, you tell me, is the ref supposed to award a timeout if the player's in trouble like that?
He can.
I mean, it should be a big point. You should be looking for that type of play in the last 2 minutes, because when the person get a rebound, you should be paying attention to the coach to call timeout. In any other game, you'll be looking at a coach or a player to call timeout in that position.
So I just think that the Celts should have called it right after getting the ball. Like, you know, Terry Rozier, when you said it. Little guy grabs a rebound in traffic, key spot, immediately call timeout. Or Stevens, call timeout. When, you know, Horford has an offensive rebound there, so you're really not... That's not where you're going to automatically call the timeout. You call it when he's on the ground. You know, that one I don't blame him for. They tried, and the ref just didn't give it to him. The other ones, you could have slowed that game down at some point there before, you know, you had two timeouts with a minute and a half left.
I mean, to me, that's where some of the mistakes were. And again, look, and the turnovers in their own, I don't know how many turnovers they had in the fourth quarter, but or even in the second half, but it felt like a lot of them were on their end of the floor, where Houston immediately got the ball, kicked it out for a three or a dunk or a layup. Like, they gave some points away on their own end of the floor.
We've also been talking about the fight on Saturday night, the heavyweight championship fight. Michael in Medford, your thoughts?
Well, I was going to comment and agree with Isaiah in Boston, the last caller you had.
Yep.
Because you mentioned believing in fixing in boxing, and I was thinking of that when he mentioned that situation in Houston. But I'm not saying there's a fix, it's just the appearance. And then on our end, when the Bruins had that, or Montreal had the 2-on-1 breakaway, that took like 4 seconds. And
brutal
I'm thinking,
call.
It's the appearance that they're doing the refs. They're not, in either case, against Houston, it was no timeout, so it wasn't awarded. But in Bruins' case, it went for us. But it was not even a delayed penalty. It was an outright penalty 4 seconds after the fact.
It was just... I think the NBA and... The NBA has a history, so, you know, you never know. But the NBA-NHL stuff, I think, is just your garden variety sketchy officiating that you get in that league, in those leagues. It's just... The boxing, you really never know. Boxing has to be more of a consideration, always.
Oh, especially when that, you know, the sport's in the state it's in and they have a potential marquee matchup in the heavyweight division on the horizon. Like, it would not surprise me in the least bit. Look, Ortiz has been popped a couple of times for performance enhancers. He goes into a fight like this. It's all about Wilder. It's on Wilder's turf. It's all about Wilder and Joshua. And maybe they said to him, look, if you get him at some point, back off. Make sure you don't put him away. Like, because that's all you got to do is get one of the two. Wilder doesn't know any different. But in the seventh round, he had Wilder. He had him down. And then in the eighth, Wilder was loopy, and he didn't go after
him. So if that smells fishy to you, I don't know. Am I a bad person for not really caring? I mean, I just want the entertainment back in that division. I, 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 I want the entertainment back in that sport. And I'm sorry, real boxing fans, I'm a pink hat. I'm a casual Johnny Come Lately sort of pink hat casual fan. So I need to see big guys hurt each other and go down. I'll take little guys who go down. Like, I used to like the middleweight divisions when I was a kid, when it was Hearns and Hagler, and those were phenomenal fights. Now I watch those guys. You guys tell me about Triple G, and you tell me about Canelo Alvarez, and you tell me about these guys, and then I watch them, and no one goes down. No one gets hurt. Like, what? And then again, I'm sorry, I want to be entertained outside of the ring a little bit as well. I do. I need that part of it. I like the promotion. I like the trash talking. So this Wilder guy entertains the crap out of me. His grandmother said he was anointed by God. And then there's no one in the ring I haven't put on their ass. Well, you can play that again, Jimmy. I can listen to that all day. His grandma told him he was anointed by God. You know that, Murray?
No, I did not.
You know what my grandma used to tell me? You kind of suck.
Yeah.
My grandma never told me I was anointed by God.
She told you to shut the hell up.
Yeah.
Getting fat, stop eating.
Yeah, shut up, yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't think that I can fight in the inside, but I had a surprise I'm showing. My grandma told me a long time ago I was anointed by God, and it shows each and every time. Now I can say there's no man that stepped in the ring that I haven't put on their ass.
Because that's what God would have said. You know, that's how, you know, what would Jesus do in that situation? He put that man on their ass.
Now I can say there's no man that stepped in the ring that I haven't put on their ass.
Okay, so
he's obviously marketable. Like, this makes me more mad because I feel like I legitimately missed something late Saturday night.
You did! And it was quick! Oh, there's another thing! I don't gotta wait 3.5 hours for the pitcher to step on the mound. Like, it was over like that.
In an hour.
Oh,
not even.
God. It's just like, so all of it. So, and again, is there a whiff of impropriety there? Maybe.
Oh, who cares? As long as it's entertaining.
I don't listen. I never said it bothered me. I'm just telling you that I think they're angling for this thing, and I don't blame them. I would too if I were boxing. It's Wilder and Joshua is the fight you want. 6'7" American against a 6'6" Brit, and they will beat the snot out of each other.
Rob in the recliner, your thoughts?
Hey guys, this guy should be one of the most famous athletes in America.
Agreed.
Right now.
Agreed.
He has so much charisma. Like, I'm pissed. Like, Murray, I didn't even know this fight was on. Like, I would have been looking forward to this all weekend. And it was a non-pay-per-view fight.
Right.
Too,
it's
right?
Oh, on top of it all, it was free. It was free.
Well, the only way I heard about it was because Billy Lanny sent us a text.
And the only way I knew about it was our fight doctor, Billy Lanny, sent us a text on Saturday. Right.
It's ridiculous. And, who wants to see, like, a bunch of these guys who I outweigh by 30 pounds that I might unwittingly take a fight with?
I'm with you. But
I want to see the biggest, baddest dudes square off and hurt each other.
It's what the sport needs.
Well, this guy's a badass. Wilder's a badass. There's no two ways about that. He's scary. I mean, when I say scary, I mean, if you are a guy who's a boxer, and this Luis Ortiz guy that he fought on Saturday night is a boxer, you can see he's a skilled guy.
Little heavy, but knows what he's doing.
Yeah, but he has an idea of how to fight. I'm not talking about his conditioning. I'm saying there's a science to what he's doing. And I would say the same thing of Joshua. Like, I look at Joshua and I say, I think Joshua's going to kill Wilder. But the X factor is, Wilder's, like, coming at you from every angle. Like, like you said, the arms are flailing. He's out here. He's coming over the top, roundhouse, hitting people with the side of his glove. Like, he's just wild. And I think guys are afraid to fight him as a result, because you have no idea where it's coming from. And if he hits you, you're in trouble, because he's got power, man. He can hit, and his hands, the caller said earlier, he's fast. His hands are fast. He gets there quick. So these guys are scared to death of him.
Felger and Mazz.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mazz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
If Charlie McAvoy's out for the playoffs, you can write off the Bruins. Forget about it. I think he might be their second most important player. I mean, it's, you know, the goalie start there, obviously. But then I think it's either Bergeron, him, Chara. I mean, he's one of them. There's no one who does what he does on the team. No one can move the puck like he does from end to end. No one can do what he does in all three zones. I mean, he's a much better defensive player than we all gave him credit for, you know, coming out. I think he's, I don't know, if you had to rank their defensemen from best to worst, is he number one?
I mean, to me, he's their best defenseman. Now, you know, you want to talk about stability, like Chara provides a lot of that too. But You can't lose McAvoy. To me, it's Bergeron, McAvoy.
Okay, so McAvoy goes out inside the first minute Saturday night, doesn't return. No real updates from the Bruins. Just trying to left to piece it together. He won't play tomorrow. You're trying to piece it together. He's at the team pitcher day today, not on skates, but he walks out in sandals or whatever, or slippers, with a brace on his left knee. Now, again, if you go to our Twitter page, our Facebook page, if you go to my minor league Twitter page, I can't tell you what platform I'm on because I'm an investor in it, but I have a Twitter page that will direct you there, and there's other ways for you to find out where I'm at, but we've all posted the video. If you watch the video of the play, not many people have seen it because Nesson buried it. They didn't go back to it until the third period, and they only showed it once, and it's quick. But right before McAvoy engages with Gallagher in the corner, he crashes into the boards. And I think, to me, it's pretty clear that he comes off the boards with his right leg completely sort of dangling. Like, his right leg has nothing on it. So I feel like he hurt his right leg crashing into the boards. Yet he's wearing a left knee brace. So which I say, now they might be screwing with people. Because, again, it's a team pitcher day. So everyone's out there. There are a million cameras. So they're showing everyone a left knee, but if you watch that video, was it the left leg that was jelly? It was jelly rolled, or the right leg that was jelly coming off of that hit into the boards? I think it's the right leg, which makes me feel good, and I'll tell you why. Because that means they might be screwing with people. If Charlie McAvoy had an ACL and was done for the year, there's no reason to fake out left or right, because he's done for the year, and there's nothing to. You know, there's no competitive advantage.
No, you'd pull the plug and that's it. You'd announce he's done and see you later.
ACL, you can tell ACL right there in the building. You don't need to wait the next day, 2 days later. You can tell right there. They move the knee and boom. They knew Brady tore his ACL before he hit the sideline in that game in 2008. So the fact that they're screwing around, maybe, and maybe I have the leg wrong, but if they're screwing around, it tells you that they're screwing around because they don't want the opponent in the first round to know what leg it is, which I would take as good news. But make no mistake, this is a big one for the Bruins.
Yeah, see, I don't think they're screwing around. I think that he hit his right knee on the boards, but I think if you look at it, it looks to me like his left knee bends inward, which to me, I look at that and say MCL. I think it's an MCL injury. And then he came back, and he might have hurt his right knee on that and banging it into the boards, but then his weight was on his left leg, and his left leg gave. And you know what? The other thing is, I would, to me, I would equate this in part, at least in part, to a full season that he's never played before. I mean, you go, you know, you're playing all these games, all these minutes, and you get to game, what, 65 or whatever the hell it is. I don't know how many they have left exactly. And all of a sudden, you know, maybe you're not quite as strong as you were early in the year, and there's some wear and tear, and the thing bent. And I think he's coming back.
Yeah, so do I. And this is, am I crazy for feeling actually kind of good about this? I breathed a sigh of relief when I heard that he wasn't on crutches and he was actually walking. Okay, so I got to think like a sprain.
So here's the thing. ACLs, you can walk. Brady walked off the field.
So did Edelman.
Most guys that pop their ACL get up and walk. You can walk. So ACL guys don't necessarily have crutches. They don't necessarily have casts.
Yeah, but you got that right the first time. They would have announced it already. If there's no chance of him coming back, what the hell are you waiting for? Like, they're dinking around?
So, MCL, 2 to 4 weeks, fine, no problem. Okay? They can handle that. Tuukka Rask also supposed to be dealing with something day-to-day. I don't buy that either. I think they're, quote-unquote, shutting him down a little strong, but, you know, giving him a blow, getting his head straight, because he has not been good in the last couple of weeks. Again, 8.78 save percentage in the last five. That's just flat-out bad. And he let up 3 goals and 7 shots against Pittsburgh, and I think they looked at that and said, time to straighten him out. And Hudobin's been playing great. Just as good as Rask. Look at the numbers. Look at the results. They're almost dead even, statistically across the board. They don't really need the points. Doesn't matter if they finish second or third. I mean, so shut Rask down and try and prevent what you've gotten from him just about every year, which is the Tuukka flu or the Tuukka choke or the Tuukka whatever.
The Tuukka poops.
The Tuukka poops. Right. Very good. The Tuukka poops. Try and see if you can get out ahead of the Tuukka poops, whether it's him shutting it down, tapping out, or just flat out sucking at the end of the year. And I applaud them if this is what they're doing.
Because some of those the goals he gave up against Pittsburgh in particular, if we're just focusing on the last game that he played.
Kaka.
Oh, my God, that Kessel goal, please. Like, that's just lazy. Like, and when I say lazy, you could look at that as a coach or as a, you know, an executive and look at that and say, he looks tired. Like, that's a lazy goal to give up. And even the other one that he gave up short side on his right-hand side, that goal, you don't give that one up either. He's not covering the net right.
Okay, finally, guess who's calling you out as cheaters and fakers and floppers and embellishers? Guess.
Claude.
The Canadiens. The Canadiens are calling you diving gutless pukes. Here's Claude Julien complaining about the officiating after the game.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. You know, your best shooter is on a breakaway, and he doesn't get a shot away. I think everybody agrees it should have been a penalty shot. You know, and what's embarrassing is Nash embellishing. It didn't, you know, the stick hits his shoulder, doesn't even hit his face, and he embellishes, looks at the referee. Those are embarrassing things in our game of hockey. You know, and we're a tired team, and we have to kill penalties, and eventually caught up to us. And, you know, that's disappointing that, you know, we had some of those things happen. Or another penalty that's called 5 seconds later because we end up on a two-on-one. You know, it's like, you know, as I said, we evaluate ourselves and you expect others to evaluate themselves as well.
Okay, pretty weak to complain about the officiating when you're 14 points out of the playoffs and have sucked all year and could only score a goal against the Bruins' backup goalie. So I don't know what, you know, the fact that he is blaming the refs is pathetic. But, I think he's right about everyone. He's right about every instance. The penalty shot, I thought, was borderline. That could have gone either way. The two-on-one that was calling Pastrnak went down on a trip was called about 3 seconds after Montreal heads out on a two-on-one. I think shorthanded, even. And they called that back. The Nash thing was embarrassing. Embarrassing. And I think Claude has been really consistent about that. He used to call out the Canadiens when he was with the Bruins coach. He would call out the Vancouver Canucks. Claude would always call out other teams for embellishing. He would discourage his players from doing the same. He's been consistent about that, and he's absolutely right about Nash. That was pathetic.
Oh, and Nash knew it, too. He did. As Julien said, he totally looked at the ref to see if he got it. I mean, he sold it or tried to sell it and then looked to see if anyone was buying. That's totally what he did. And I think it was a penalty shot. I think the Bruins got away with one there. He was in alone. Came up behind him, and he hooked him. I mean, to me, that was textbook. They got away with one there, too. So, now look, he sounds like a whiner, but I think he nailed it.
Well, he nailed it on Nash, for sure. Nailed it on Nash. And good for calling him out, and you should be called out. And I for one, can't stand the flopping and embellishing in any sport. It ruins it for me. And I've always liked the fact that the Bruins have usually do it less than other teams. They're certainly not perfect. Marchand will do it. Chara will do it. But when a guy who's 6'5", 220, you know, Rick Nash is now, you know, whipping his head back like he's a little gutless Montreal Canadien, you shouldn't feel good about it. The only reservation I have is F the Canadiens. If anyone deserves to have it happen to them, it's the Canadiens. So screw them. Like, I'm not shedding a tear for the freaking Montreal Canadiens. Screw them. Seriously. But otherwise, don't be that team. Don't be that team. You don't need to be that team. So no, I can't stand it when the Celtics and Marcus Smart do it. I can't stand it when the Bruins do it. I can't stand it when the opponent does it. Don't do it. Claude's right about that. All right, so we've got that on the board. We've got the Celtics on the board. We've gotten the fight on the board. But let's give you one more. Bill Belichick spoke today at the Combine. Bill Belichick actually went behind the microphone and spoke. We'll hear from Bill right after this.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mazz.
I just want to say on behalf of all the football fans out there, you guys do a tremendous job.
Thank you.
You really do. This is a tremendous production. And, you know, Mike, I know how hard it is to do a draft board for one team, and that's hard. You're doing it for 32 teams, as well as knowing what all the teams are looking for and who their players are, and you know, putting it all together for us. And you guys do an awesome job. I can't tell you how much information you know, you guys put out there to the fans, and I would say the league, but me and that group too. You know, in the time that you guys do this over this weekend, so you guys do a tremendous job.
So that's Bill Belichick to the NFL Network, who's doing live combine coverage, of course. So it's Rich Eisen and Mike Mayock, his boy. Mike Mayock's been Belichick's guy for a while. He's the one that told us that Ryan Mallett's arm, you know, popped and showed first-round arm talent. And so Mayock's been doing Belichick's bidding for a while. So Belichick returns the favor to Mike Mayock, washes his undercarriage today like you wouldn't read about. He walks up to Rich Eisen, who, and this is good stuff. I'm not ragging on this. I'm just telling you what happened. Belichick gave Rich Eisen a big check for his charity, you know, the Run Rich Run thing. He runs the 40. It's for, is it St. Jude's Children's Hospital? Is that
what
it is?
I'm not even sure.
I might have the affiliation wrong, but Rich's cause. And Bill walked up and handed Rich Eisen a big fat check to donate for the cause. Kiss the ass of these NFL Network guys between Rich, Mike Mayock. You'll hear Deion. Here, I mean, you heard that first cut. I mean, you didn't think it could get worse. It does. Go on.
A couple times this week where, you know, I haven't been able to watch this. And, But I've been able to, you know, follow it on TV. And honestly, you don't really miss anything. I mean, there was a time when these broadcasts had, you know, specials, and then you cut away and you, right. you miss a whole drill or half the 40 or whatever. I mean, now it's, you know, virtually see every guy do everything. And it's, I mean, it's great. It's really, you guys do a great job. And, again, you know, it's and the guys that you're working with, you know, I hear them saying, well, you know, need to go back and watch this game against Auburn, need to go back and watch game against Elsie, you know, and no, that's great information, because you don't always get to do that. And like I said, what, you know, the depth that you cover this event and cover the college draft and the way you put it together with like what teams need and how these players fit differently from team to team based on their skill set, is, you know, it's really great. A lot of insight.
Oh, God. On and on. On and on. Just kissing these guys' ass. And then they go, let's give you a couple more snippets. They go into, I guess, Deion Sanders, you know, who was on part of the coverage, at part of the NFL Network, had a legendary 40 time when he ran in whatever year that was, 91, whatever. Whatever year it was, he ran and had a legendary time. And Bill was there scouting as part of the Giants, and Bill went back into this. Listen to this exchange.
Now, is that true that he did he run out of the building?
Sure did, yeah. Ran a 40 and just ran right through the end zone in the old dome. Yeah.
Prime, he just took off? Is that what? Is, I don't know if Deion's still out there, but he just took right off, huh?
Well, it was fast enough.
Fast enough.
Terrific.
Whatever the time was, everybody looked at it and said, that's fast enough.
Well, I think it's even better that nobody knows. It's become urban legend now. You know, was it 419? Was it whatever? Who cares, right?
I want to say it was 427.
No, that was better than that.
It was better than that. Okay, all right.
I'm just saying it was better than that, Coach.
There he is.
Coach, I respect you at the utmost. I mean, you're the best coach to ever do it, but it was better than that, Coach.
All right, well, I'm a little slow on the trigger there. I just remember when I interviewed you in the hotel and I said, you know, like you're a great player and, you know, you're going to have a big impact on whichever team you go to. But with all due respect, if you come to the Giants, you know, we got another guy who's, you know, who's a little bit bigger than you are at this point. You know, how would you handle that? And obviously referring to Taylor, and you said, well, I think the fans are just going to have to change and get used to me if I'm there.
Oh, good one. Oh, yes, it's so much fun. Bill calls him Prime. So much fun. Just play four. This is so much fun, Bill. We love you.
You think he calls Brady TB12?
Prime. Here's the fourth one.
Coach, I think we could do this for a couple hours. Yeah. This is pretty good,
hey,
man.
Coach is awesome, man. He is awesome.
Coach is awesome.
Deion, you do a great job. I love Mondays when you're here to do the DBs and you do the, you know, inside into the corners. Mike does the safeties, and you know, you guys go back and forth. It's really it's great TV.
Oh my God, great TV!
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, no, that's how the combat's exactly what I think of when I think of great television.
Great TV,
the combine.
When does Bill tell a media guy he's doing great TV? So here's my takeaway. Bill's playing the media game because he's getting hammered. He's getting hammered by people, and rightfully so, for the Malcolm Butler thing, for other things. And so the people who think Bill is above caring about media coverage are just, you've bought into the wrong storyline, folks. Bill cares about what is being said and written about him. Always has. Always has. Trust me, I've been on all sides of it. He cares deeply. But the media cartel, the Patriots, Tony's, oh, he doesn't care about the media. He doesn't care about you. You're just so wrong. He cares. Has always cared. And so now he steps up and he gives Mike Mayock a tongue bath like you haven't seen on TV in a long time. He's sucking up to Deion Sanders.
Prime.
Prime. And he's handing out big checks to Rich Eisen and kissing their ass. When the NFL Network convenes a panel discussion involving Rich Eisen or Mike Mayock or Deion Sanders and Malcolm Butler comes up, how do you think that's going to be treated? Kid gloves.
Oh, for sure.
Hands off. Because Bill is good to him. Because it's amazing. Like, Bill, see, you don't think Bill would understand this, but he does. You treat people well, they treat you well in return. It's just sort of the way it works.
Well, so then maybe there's some indication there that he knows that he screwed up.
Or he wants to try and manage the coverage a little bit. And what also sort of frustrates me is he knows he can step on there and they're not going to. They're going to talk, oh, remember when Deion ran out of the tunnel? At the RCA Dome. Yeah, Prime, that was great TV. You know, they know what kind of interview that's going to be. Bill's going to come back here. And the first time he faces the media, he's going to be asked about Malcolm Butler. And you know what he's going to do.
snort and grunt.
He's going to pick his nose and flick the booger at the guy, the person that asked him. Never mind, you guys do great stuff. Really, you know, good job asking the right questions and the questions that fans are interested in. And, you know, I really appreciate the coverage that you guys do. It's great TV, guys. You know, the things that you do. You know, you ask the hard questions, and these are the things that fans are talking about. When he gets asked that, when he comes back here, he's going to grunt into the microphone and snort and flick a booger at the first reporter that asks about Malcolm Butler. But these guys, Prime and Mike, oh, Coach, this is great. Oh, Coach, this is so much fun.
See, you know what? When I was listening to this today, one of the things I asked myself is, did anybody ask him about Butler?
Of course not.
Like, did that come up at all? So it was one of the first things I wanted to know. And then when I, you know, then I started to hear the tenor of the interview. And so, look, I mean, I just think Belichick does everything for a reason. You might be right. I also wonder if somewhere down the line he's like, you know, I might need you guys in a year. I don't know. He'll occasionally do stuff for, I have no idea. I just wonder. I wonder what his motivation is. And I don't doubt that, you know, managing the media and worrying about his image is part of it.
Oh, this yuck fest.
Coach, I think we could do this for a couple hours. This is pretty good,
hey,
man.
Coach is awesome, man.
Coach is awesome, man.
I love Mondays when you're here to do the DBs and the inside into the corners. Mike does the safeties, and you know you guys go back and forth. It's really it's great TV.
Yeah, great TV, Bill. Great TV. You BS artist. He's so full of it. It's not even funny. It's like just wait till he meets the media back here in Boston. And you know, even us around here that have been browbeaten by Bill and the media cartel and all of this, he's going to get asked about it because you just can't. You know, it's not going to be that sort of thing. Like on the NFL, he's going to be asked about Butler. He's going to be asked about Butler quite a bit. He's going to be asked about all sorts of things.
We're on to 2018,
right? So anyway. There was Bill's big media availability so far this offseason.
Yeah, I wonder who Mayock's going to take the cheese on this time. Jordan Richards, maybe? Like, you know, well, he really played a better game than you think he did. I don't know. Who is it? Eric Rowe?
Like, but people still say this, that Bill doesn't care about the media. He doesn't give the media anything. Do you know who doesn't give the media anything? And I've come to sort of respect him for it. You know who gives the media nothing?
Don Sweeney.
The Bruins. The Bruins are, you don't get anything out of them. McAvoy gets hurt on Friday. And they don't leak a drop until the point you're till today, and they're still not saying anything. Does Elliot Freeman have anything? Does Bob McKenzie have anything? Does Darren Dreger have anything? Does Fluto, Kevin, Paul DuPont, Steve Conroy, does anyone have anything? Nothing. Zero. 0.0. You know where you get Bruins news from? The Bruins. They're the ones to announce their trades. You know who announces Patriots trades? Schefter! Just look at it.
It's probably because they all like each other behind the scenes.
But just track it. When there's a big Patriots move, someone has it first. Someone has it. We find out from Schefter, Rappaport, Curran, name it. We don't find out from the Patriots. Clock the Bruins news. It's all from the Bruins official feed.
That's true.
They don't. Don Sweeney, I give credit to. He doesn't play favorites. I don't know who his guy is in the media. I don't think he has one because no one gets anything. Who are Bill's guys? It's pretty easy to figure out who their guys are. And so, like, this whole narrative that Bill doesn't care about the media or doesn't talk to the media, you're so wrong, people. And again, from someone who's been on all sides of it, that's just, it's flat out wrong. But as I look at the Bruins from the outside, I'm like, God, they don't tell anyone anything. So anyway, there's that little rant.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.